Hear the best of Charlie Kirk, Sunday afternoon at 4 on the Hill Country Patriot.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will bring it to a whisper. For the next hour, sit quietly and we shall control all that you hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
And now, it's time for the radio show that covers just about every topic. Because variety is the spice of life. From the arcane and unusual to current events and practical tips. Because if it's interesting, they'll be talking about it. And now here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
Hello.
Good morning, Hill Country.
We weren't sure what was going to happen on the radio. It's you never know what will happen on the radio.
Live. This is live radio.
Exactly right.
My mouse wasn't working. Yeah. I'm the engineer, and I control things here.
I know. Allison said, don't talk. When Harley's intro's over, don't talk. We're going to go right into a commercial. There's nothing I can do about it. I said, okay. So nothing. Well, worked out just fine. It worked out just fine. Well, we are, as Harley said, Bill and Allison, and we welcome to your you to our program.
I'm Allison.
You are Allison, and I'm Bill, of course.
I say that because a lot of times people will call and they our house and they think they're talking to Bill.
Yeah, that's true.
Even
that's true.
Through an entire conversation.
Well, fortunately, they don't think that I'm Allison when they talk to me on the phone. But anyway, we are Bill and Allison. We're sometimes wrong.
But we're always right.
We're always right. Fighting a never-ending battle for truth. Justice.
And the American way.
And we are never PC, are we, Allison?
No, we're not.
We are proudly politically incorrect. PI, I guess
exactly
you call
right.
it.
Exactly right. Okay. Exactly.
Most importantly, we strive to be BC, biblically correct. And I'm a native Texan, and Allison, you are?
Native American.
You're a Native American. Native American. So I was born in Texas, you were born in America, I guess is what that means. But Allison actually is a Native American, partly. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. A part of her is
little tiny bit
Chickasaw.
Mm-hmm.
Chickasaw,
and my tribe is their headquarters is Ada, Oklahoma.
Ada, mm-hmm. Ada, Oklahoma. Trigger warning: Allison and I identify as non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
My preferred pronoun is Brandon, and what's yours this week, Allison? Do you have a pronoun you picked out?
I forget.
You forgot.
Well,
I'm a
PO'd American.
You're a PO'd American. Okay. Good.
I had a new one last week, but now I forget what
I thought so. You have to go back and listen to the recording on...
I guess so.
First couple of...
TexasRadio.com.
Yeah, that's where you can hear last week's show or any week's show, pretty much. Well, we like to start our program off with a verse, and this comes from the book of Romans in the Bible, chapter 10. Faith comes by hearing... And hearing by the word of God. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. The Puritan Thomas Brooks wrote, "The word of the Lord is a light to guide you, a counselor to counsel you, a comforter to comfort you, a staff to support you, a sword to defend you, and a physician to cure you. The word is a mine to enrich you, a robe to clothe you, and a crown to crown you." Thomas Brooks. Worth looking up and reading, Thomas Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got some Texas history for you today. In 1923, this week, the Dr. Pepper Company was incorporated in Dallas. It was first made in Waco in 1885. A pharmacist named Charles Alderton, when he didn't fill prescriptions, he often served soft drinks to customers, and he liked to experiment with fruit extracts and sweeteners. And that's how he came up with Dr. Pepper. And he named it after Dr. Charles T. Pepper, who was actually a real person.
I didn't know it was named after a real person.
Mm-hmm. He was a very popular physician and pharmacist for whom he had worked in Virginia. And we were just in Virginia a couple of weeks ago.
And we lived in Virginia for many years.
Yeah, we did. When we worked for Washington, we worked for the U.S. Congress. We lived in Alexandria, Virginia for many years.
Walking distance to Mount Vernon, home of George
That's
Washington.
True. We actually lived, our home was on what was George Washington's farm. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, of course, George Washington had more than a quarter acre. But we were on what used to be his farm.
And when I went out on my daily walks, I would very often walk by Mount Vernon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's Dr. Pepper. Natural Bridge Caverns was opened in 1964 this week, the largest known cavern in Texas. It was discovered by four students at St. Mary's University in San Antonio in 1960. And so that's... They just stumbled across it. They were spelunkers, amateur spelunkers. Mm-hmm. And they just...
I've told you about this before, but I grew up with caves.
Yeah, you did, in southern Ohio, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, there are quite a few caves.
Well, that's part of the Mammoth Cave system, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, the also this week in 1934, after the ambush of Bonnie and Clyde, they had their funerals. Okay.
Well, and we saw where they were ambushed.
We did. We did.
In Louisiana?
Yeah. Gippsland, mm-hmm. Louisiana. Mm-hmm. We were mm-hmm. driving on I-10 in northern Louisiana, and just, I think, outside of Shreveport, that area. And I saw the sign that said Gippsland, Louisiana. And I said to Allison, I'm pretty sure that's where Bonnie and Clyde were killed. I have all these mm-hmm. little factoids. Totally useless. But I said, we got to go. So we found where the site where they were mm-hmm. ambushed.
There's a little museum.
And there's a little museum there, and mm-hmm. we went in.
What did you tell the proprietor?
Well,
about me?
Let me set the stage here.
Okay,
it's this tiny little museum. We were the only people there except for the man who owns it, and older gentleman. And there's some interesting stuff in there, but we were the only ones there for the whole time we were there, and started talking to the proprietor, and I said. Do you happen to know who the first law enforcement officer was that Clyde Barrow killed? And he said, oh, sure. He said, Stringtown, Oklahoma. And it was...
Eugene Moore.
Eugene Moore. And I said, well, Allison is too shy to tell you this, but I said, meet Eugene Moore's cousin, Allison. And he almost fell on the floor. He said, every year we have a Bonnie and Clyde festival. And he said, we have a dinner where authors come, researchers, professors, historians, and specialists in Bonnie and Clyde. He said, you would be the queen of the dinner.
and then COVID came.
And then COVID came and they shut it down. And I'm not sure they're even having it anymore. But that's a little personal thing about Bonnie and Clyde. So Yeah, he was, Eugene Moore was just, what happened was there was an outdoor dance, mm-hmm. And we've been to the site in Stringtown, they have a mm-hmm. marker, mm-hmm. and I just saw the picture the other day that we had, of you standing by the marker. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they had an outdoor dance, and this is Prohibition now, mm-hmm. and so they were, you know, they were drinking, and it was not that big a deal, you know, small town, you know. Isn't, you know, they don't have Elliot Ness to enforce prohibition. And so the sheriff and his deputy, Eugene Moore, went over to this car, and these guys were in it, Clyde Barrow and one of his gang members, I guess, or one or two. And when they saw the sheriff coming, they just opened fire, and they killed your mm-hmm. cousin for no reason.
Well, okay, so in other words, my cousin was killed because of prohibition.
That's right.
The cops would not have been at that dance if they weren't trying to sneak around and capture people who were drinking alcohol.
Yeah, I don't know that they even cared about that much. I'm not sure.
That's why they were there.
Well,
it was a dance.
Yeah.
That's why they were there.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously, I read about it.
Oh, okay. All right. Also today in history, Margaret Borland died of trail fever or congestion of the brain. After successfully leading a drive of about 2,500 cattle from Victoria, Texas to Wichita, Kansas. And she's the only woman ever to lead a cattle drive. This was on July 5th, 1873.
And the reason Bill is laughing about this, that is my maiden name.
Borland is your maiden name. So there's some relation there, I imagine. It's not that common a name.
It's too bad my brother's not around because he was good with family history.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the one who dug up the story about Eugene Moore.
Oh, is that a fact?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So that's Margaret Borland, the only. So you are descended from the only woman to lead a cattle drive. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Except my Borlands were in Pennsylvania. So.
Yeah, not too many cattle drives in Pennsylvania. Maybe they have chicken drives or something in Pennsylvania. Pig drives. I don't know.
Maybe she escaped Pennsylvania.
That's possible. Also, on this week, July 6th, in 1971, Louis Armstrong passed away. And Louis Armstrong, or Satchmo, as he was known, or Pops, he was known to fellow musicians, he's always called Pops, one of the most famous, of course, and influential jazz artists. He was the leading trumpet player of his day. He even kicked the Beatles off the number one spot in the charts. He died on July 6, 1971, and I had the opportunity to see him in concert in a small venue in Moline, Illinois, when I was a kiddo, and I'll never forget that. I still have some pictures of that. But it's hard to say, you know, what's his most famous song. I mean, Hello Dolly, everybody knows pretty much. But there's one in particular that I think is probably most people say this is their favorite Louis Armstrong song. So Alice and I are going to just play a few moments of it and remind you of it.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.
All right, Louis Armstrong.
The great Louis Armstrong. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And now we're going to play, I ran across this really interesting thing, which I think you'll really enjoy, from Mike Rowe. And if you aren't familiar with him, he has a show, Mike Rowe Works, and his website is micro.com, R-O-W-E. But this is a really, really a wonderful piece regarding Independence Day.
Well, hey there, America. How are you? Happy Independence Day. Or as some prefer, happy 4th of July. Personally, I'm partial to Independence Day. That's just me. I don't say happy November 26th. I say happy Thanksgiving. I don't say happy December 25th. I say Merry Christmas. But far be it from me to judge. This is a holiday-inspired version of the way I heard it. I just wrote it moments ago, and I just spilled some beer on it. If you like it, you can listen to more over at micro.com/podcast. If you don't, this is happening one way or the other, so you might as well listen. It'll be over in 5 minutes. Ready? John's a farmer in Hopewell, New Jersey. Like many working farmers, John feeds lots of Americans who have absolutely no idea where their food actually comes from. But unlike many of his peers, John is not struggling to make a living. Far from it. John is prospering. In fact, John is downright rich. So too is Frank. Frank made his money doing whatever it is international businessmen do. Something to do with the mercantile exchange. He was born in Wales and educated in the very best schools. After becoming a legal citizen of this country, he made an absolute fortune. Now he employs more people than he can keep track of. And then there's Richard. Richard is one of the wealthiest lawyers in America. He studied law at Princeton, which his ancestors helped build, and worked under the Honorable David Ogden of Newark. He sits on the bench of the New Jersey Supreme Court, where his reputation as a jurist earns him the respect of politicians on both sides of the aisle. Not long ago, John, Frank, and Richard sat down with dozens of other wealthy Americans at a private men's club in Philadelphia to discuss, among other things, the future of the country and our current tax code. Not only do these men believe their taxes are way too high, they feel their money is being squandered by America's leaders. They're also offended, deeply offended, by the continual assertion that they are not paying their fair share. John, Frank, and Richard listen attentively as a number of powerful men address the group. They talk with great passion about the need to elect a leader who will stop dividing the country. Ultimately, the men draft a manifesto outlining their concerns and announcing their refusal to keep paying taxes to an administration they believe to be corrupt. John, Frank, and Richard each sign the manifesto along with everyone else in the room. Then they send it off to the largest media outlets in the country and go home to see what might happen next. Well, they don't have to wait long. In the halls of power, America's leaders are livid. How can these wealthy men who have enjoyed so much good fortune complain about paying a little extra for the good of the country, they say? Do these elitists seriously think they could have possibly prospered without the government's help? Maybe it's time to teach these guys a lesson. And so they do. When Frank arrives home at his mansion in New York, it's been thoroughly looted. Armed troops now occupy his estate. They're confiscating everything of value, including his wife. They locked her up for months with little food or water. Didn't even give her a change of clothes. Frank went mad with worry and panic. They let her out eventually, and then she died. John doesn't fare much better. Troops have occupied his farm in Hopewell. They refuse to relinquish it. John learns the occupiers have orders to execute him in the town square. Recently widowed with 12 children, John is now a wanted man. He goes into hiding, moving from place to place under the cover of darkness, and lives on the lam for the better part of a year. Eventually, the stress kills him. Richard's wealth and status make him an even bigger target. Armed men barge into his home and drag him from his bed in the middle of the night. He's locked up, starved, and tortured. Richard survives, but never really recovers. His vast fortune is stolen, and he spends his final days utterly dependent on the kindness of friends. John Hart, Francis Lewis, Richard Stockton. If their names don't seem familiar, it's probably because they've been overshadowed by other men who signed the same manifesto. Men like Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams. Men whose names are now preserved for posterity on the bottom of that troublesome document that so enraged the occupiers in the red coats. Unlike most revolutions, ours didn't start with an angry mob armed with pitchforks and guillotines with absolutely nothing to lose. That was France. Our revolution started because 56 very wealthy men with everything to lose put everything on the line for a country that didn't even exist yet. The internet is full of grossly exaggerated accounts of what happened to the original signers. And that's too bad, really, because the truth of what actually happened back in that exclusive men's club in Philadelphia, also known as the Second Continental Congress, is remarkable enough with no embellishments at all. Those 56 men, those one percenters of 1776, they could have easily paid whatever new tax was being demanded by their king. They could have easily lived out their lives in comfortable peace. But they didn't. They chose liberty over safety. When they signed that manifesto, they weren't just declaring their independence. They were signing their own death warrant. And when they pledged their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor, they weren't just making a pledge to the King of England or to each other or to the rest of their fellow colonists. They were making a pledge to you and me. And they kept it. 240 years later, as the hot dogs plump up on the grill and the condensation forms on another bottle of cold beer and the fireworks explode overhead, their pledge and their courage are still worth remembering and celebrating. Anyway, that's the way I heard it. So, happy Independence Day. Or the 4th of July, if you prefer, but let's be honest. It's Independence Day.
Well, that was the great micro. And I think probably the reason we call it July 4th, as he talked about, is because a lot of us forget that we're the independence, because we've always lived in a independent United States, and our parents and our grandparents, assuming they were in the United States. So we're just not used to the concept of not being independent.
That's very true. And you bring up an interesting point. I remember reading about someone who said, and this is supposed to be a true story, talking to someone who had emigrated from Cuba and escaped from Cuba. And he said to the guy, he said, "Boy, you're really fortunate to be able to come to America." And he said, "You're really fortunate to live in America." And the man said, "Yeah," he said, "that's true." He said, "I feel sorry for you." He says, "What do you mean?" He said, "You Americans don't have any place to go that's more free. And as you lose your freedoms, there's no other place to go."
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Some have said down watching. So stick around after this short break and listen to a little bit of Waylon Jennings in praise of our country.
Mm-hmm. You've become such a habit with me. America, America.
Well, I come from down round Tennessee, but the people in California were nice to me. America. It don't matter where I may roam, tell you people that it's home sweet home. America, America.
That's like the guy who was pulled over by the cop, and he said, "You blew by me at 80 miles an hour." The cop says, "Didn't you see the sign?" He says, "Yeah, I saw the speed limit sign. I didn't see you." Oh, my. Let's see. There's another one where a guy's pulled over, and he says,
"Hold my beer."
Yeah. Don't ever say to the cop, "My license, I'll get it. Hold my beer, please." No, you never say that. Thank you for reminding me of that one. Another one is... Well, the cop says, "Don't you know the speed limit here is 40 miles an hour?" And the guy says, "Well, I was only be driving for about 15 minutes, not an hour." You haven't heard that one, have you?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, and do I tell a blonde joke on the air? Or not too many people are offended by blonde jokes.
Well,
Allison is.
You should point out that I'm blonde.
If you hold the microphone up like a camera, they can see that. Now, I won't tell any blonde jokes.
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
Some ladies don't like
blonde jokes. I enjoy blonde jokes.
Well, I'm not telling them just to you. We're not.
Come on.
We're on the radio.
Come on.
Okay. As long as I'm talking about...
If they have a sense of humor, they'll get it.
Okay. Lady cop pulls over, a blonde lady cop pulls over a car, and there's a lady blonde driving it. And she says, okay, I'd like to see your driver's license. And so the blonde driver rummages in her purse, and she says, what's it look like? And she says, well, it's rectangular, and it has your picture on it. And so she pulls out her pocket mirror, and she says, here it is, and hands it to the cop. And the blonde cop says, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were a police officer. I don't want any letters. I don't want any bad texts or anything. It'd probably be the last blonde joke I'll ever tell on the radio, so I'm sorry. No. I apologize in advance.
As I said, I enjoy blonde jokes, and I'm about as blonde as you can get.
Okay, but if I just in case, if I haven't gotten to your ethnicity or your whatever you're very serious about and insulted yet, just wait. just keep listening.
Maybe tell some Polak jokes.
Oh, there you go. And I'm Polish, so I can do that. But no. So if I haven't gotten to your peccadrillos, whatever it is, whatever your problem is, I'll get to it. Don't worry about it. So, oh, what do we got here? Oh, we've got. Oh, you want to introduce this? Introduce the story anyway. So everybody knows this story by now.
The big story has been the cocaine found in the White House, and of course, everybody knows who it belonged to.
Yeah, of course. Didn't the bag say property of H. Biden on it?
Exactly. It belonged to Hunter.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And it was found in an area where tourists don't go.
No, it's only family and high-level staff mm-hmm. allowed there. Mm-hmm. And they have cameras all over the place. What do you mean they don't know who left it there?
Of course Hunter left it. I mean, how stupid are you to leave your cocaine?
Well, when you're high, you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
I mean, I saw a couple of videos of him just this week, of uh-huh. Hunter, and at White House ceremony.
Yeah. And with his wife and kids.
With his wife and kids, and he was obviously high, and he kept grabbing his nose with his fingers, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, is what cocaine has.
Well, I was going to say, if you're around somebody who uses cocaine, they sniffle a lot.
Yeah. Well, Dan Bongino, everybody I think knows who that is, who spent his career in the Secret Service. He says only the family of the president could sneak cocaine into the White House.
That's a good point.
Only, of course, Hunter Biden's is the president's son. Bongino said, quote, there's absolutely zero, and he emphasized, zero chance anyone other than a family member brought that cocaine inside the White House complex. No chance that it would make it past the magnetrons and security checkpoints. Mm-hmm. Family bypasses those.
Mm-hmm.
So staff has to go through, the high-level staff has to go through, but family doesn't have to go through security. So if it was a staff member that had the cocaine, they would have been caught. But obviously, they weren't caught because it wasn't a staff member. It was Hunter.
Of course it was.
Of course it was.
Of course it was.
I just saw this morning, Senator John Kennedy, who we're going to be hearing from momentarily, said last night that he said, if I was screwing up the country so as bad as Biden is, he said, if my record was as bad as this White House's record, this is the exact quote, if my record was as bad as this White House's record, I'd probably give my staff blow, too. John Kennedy, and they did say he was only kidding, but, you know, if it's probably true. That's probably, maybe that's what's wrong with good old Uncle Joe. He's pie, maybe. Who knows?
I think he's just senile.
Well, he might be. I don't know. But anyway, if you don't know Senator John Kennedy... not the former president, but he's a senator from Louisiana, Republican senator from Louisiana, and he has the best. He's the best interview in Washington, I think. He is just marvelous. He has this turn of phrase. Here's Senator John Kennedy talking about Hunter Biden in another scandal.
It's almost always the cover up and not the crime. And number two, I'm repeatedly amazed at how many smart people there are in Washington, D.C. who have no sense. Look, I don't know if Mr. Hunter Biden committed a crime. I sure don't know if President Biden committed a crime. We're trying to get the facts. But I do know this, and I think the American people can see it. The Washington managerial elite, the establishment, if you will, is working harder than an ugly stripper to cover up whatever happened. And that's all that Congress is asking for, is the facts. And to the point that they have no sense, the elite in Washington think that the American people don't see that they're covering up and that they're being obstructionist. Maybe it's a reflection of the contempt they have for the American people, but any fair-minded person can see that that our effort to get to the facts are being obstructed. Look at this from 35,000 feet. Please. Let's suppose you're an important government official, Bill, and very powerful, and your grown kid comes home one day and says, "Dad, good news. A bunch of Russian companies and Chinese companies and Romanian companies and Ukrainian companies have just hired me. They're giving me millions of dollars to give them advice about stuff I don't know anything about." Now, what are you going to do as a responsible government official? You're not going to say, "Don't tell me anything about it, but be sure and share some with your sister." You're going to try to find out what's going on. And the White House's story is that the president knew nothing about any of this. And, I mean, it just doesn't pass the smell test.
Okay, coming up after this quick break, one of the strangest coincidences in history.
Texas, our Texas, all hail the mighty state. Texas, oh Texas, you're wonderful and great. Boldest and grandest, withstanding every test. Oh, empire wide and glorious, you stand supremely blessed. Texas, oh Texas, your freeborn single star sends out its radiance to nations near and far. Emblem of freedom, it sets our hearts aglow with thoughts of San Jacinto and glorious Alamo. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long. God bless you, Texas, and keep you brave and strong, that you may grow in power and word throughout the ages long.
Okay, I promised to tell you one of history's strangest coincidences.
Okay.
Did I promise that?
I don't know. Sure you did. Sure you did. Yes, you did, Allison. Of course you did. I listen to your every, I hang on your every word.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, when you're in radio, and you're with another person, you sometimes just don't pay attention to what they're saying.
Or when you're married.
Okay, so it's sort of like being married.
Is that what you're saying? No, Allison says I have two faults. She said, one, I don't listen to her, and the other, I don't know, something like that. She was saying something, I don't know what it's.
Okay, well, the strange coincidence, and this happened in Virginia, where, as Bill said, we just were, where we spent many years. There's a Northern Virginia plantation owner, Wilmer McLean. He was happy to cede his grounds to the Confederates for what became the first Battle of Bull Run in July of 1861. And we know where that is.
Right outside. Well, Manassas is also known as Manassas.
Mm-hmm.
The
Battle of First Manassas or something like that.
Yeah, it's the, I think the southern term. The South and the North had different terms for the battles,
places,
because the South knew, because the South was invaded by the North, it would say, okay, this is the Battle of Manassas, for example, or Bull Run, whatever they call it. I think the North called it Bull Run, and the South called it First Manassas or Second Manassas, because they knew the names of the towns, and the North didn't. They just knew the names of the river nearby or creek or something. Yeah.
Okay, but as I said, Mr. McLean allowed his grounds to be used by the Confederates for what, as I said, was the first battle of Bull Run.
Manassas. Uh-huh. First Manassas.
But then he got tired of the destruction by the time his plantation was again used for a follow-up battle in August of 1862. So he moved his family south to the isolated village of Appomattox Courthouse.
I know that story.
The following year. Turns out he didn't get far enough away from the action, as an aide to General Robert E. Lee requested the use of his new residence for a surrender to Union General Ulysses S. Grant in April 1865.
Yeah, but by doing so, he made the family very wealthy, because you know, the table that the surrender that Lee signed and Grant signed was the family dining room table. And can you imagine then the value of that to the family later on, to have that, to have the pens that they used, right, and all that. So it was.
But do you suppose they profited from it?
I don't know the backstory.
Or was it later?
I don't know the backstory. It would have been later, and at the time they wouldn't, and anybody had money to buy it. But right. No, I don't know the backstory of that. But yeah, that is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
That he said, "I've had enough." First, there was First Manassas that his house was at. Excuse me, I believe it's still there. And then Second Manassas. And so he said, heck with this, I'm moving to Appomattox.
Appomattox Courthouse.
Wow. Can you believe that? I mean, that's one of the little factoids of the war between the states.
The War of Northern Aggression.
The War of Northern Aggression, it's known as, or as Granny on Beverly Hillbillies once said, the war between the North and America. But, no, that's one of those little factoids that makes history absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely fascinating. Of course, excellent. Virginia is replete with battles and sites to see relating not only to the war between the states, but the Revolutionary War as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Virginia is a great place to visit if you've never been there, or even if you have, go back. Good opportunity to see the nation's capital, and it's just a wonderful place. They have ocean, they have mountains. It's you know, we miss Virginia, but we love Texas. Texas is number one. Texas number one.
But we do try to get back to visit about once a year.
We do. We just did, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there was a private who was captured, a Southern Confederate private who was captured in a battle, and the Union general asked him, this is supposedly a true story, the Union general asked him, why are you fighting? And the soldier said, because you're here, because you invaded the South. I'm fighting for my family. He didn't own any slaves. Most of them did not. Anyway, what happens when we come back, Allison? What do we got? Well, I know what we got.
Well, okay, we'll tell you what's going on with Target.
Yeah, Target is something that you need to know about. We also got the fact that the Biden's military can't tell the difference between sexes or between itself and Russia.
Now, the first couple of Texas Radio. Here's Bill and Allison Mancaro.
We are back, and we are Bill and Allison.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. You may have found yourself wondering recently, as the world slides closer to nuclear annihilation than any time in human history, why exactly are we at war with Russia? It seems like there's a pretty significant downside to this particular foreign policy decision, starting with economic collapse and ending potentially with extinction. So is there a good reason we're doing it? So many innocent young people have been killed. So many hundreds of billions of dollars have been wasted, some of them from the U.S. Treasury. So what's the point? Are we really doing this so the Biden family can repay its debts to the oligarchs who finance their beach house in Rehoboth? Are we doing it so our government can continue to lie about its illicit biolabs in Eastern Europe? So that flabby losers like Toria Nuland and Tony Blinken can feel like they're doing something important with their sad, empty lives? Really? Honestly, there's got to be a better reason for waging this, the most pointless war of all. What is it? Well, thankfully, we have an answer. The war against Russia, ladies and gentlemen, the war against Putin and for Ukraine is in fact a war for democracy. Watch and recall the motive.
The president has said many times we're focused on what we can do to support Ukraine's effort to fight for their democracy.
Democracy must prevail. The Ukrainian people are fighting the fight for their democracy and in doing so for ours as well.
Assisting and helping Ukraine win this fight for democracy and freedom.
And of course, Ukrainian President Zelensky understands that what's at stake in Ukraine is bigger than just his nation. It is literally a battle for freedom and democracy themselves.
They are showing the world what an existential fight for democracy looks like.
President Zelensky and the Ukrainians have changed the course of history for the better, and we unequivocally are with the Ukrainian people in their fight to remain a sovereign democracy.
Unequivocally with the Ukrainian people to remain a democracy. It's a bipartisan view. Democracy must prevail. You just heard noted democracy expert Nancy Pelosi say, the daughter of the mobbed up mayor of Baltimore. As Pelosi puts it, the Ukrainian people are fighting the fight for their democracy and for ours as well. That's right, for ours as well. Without Ukrainian democracy, in other words, we can have no democracy here. If the Ukrainians aren't free, neither are we. We must make sure they can vote in Kiev so we can continue to vote in Kansas City. It's really that simple. And yet tonight, we regret to tell you that we have a problem. It looks like they're not going to be able to vote in Kiev anymore. And no, for once, it's not Putin's fault. Democracy in Ukraine seems to be suspended by the world's foremost democracy advocate himself, Field Marshal Zelensky. Watch this.
Чи будуть в Україні наступного року вибори?
Це ж питання глобальне. І якщо ми переможемо, то будуть. Значить, не буде військового часу, не буде війни. А вибори повинні проходити у час, у мирний час, коли немає війни, згідно законодавства.
So when you have an election, well, he says, if we win, we'll let people vote. Otherwise, no. You vote when we feel like it, because ultimately we're completely in charge and make all the rules. Your job is to obey or be punished. That's our version of self-government. Self means me. I'm the government. Now, that's not just any autocrat. That's our chief ally in the war for democracy. This is the guy who just announced he's likely to cancel next year's elections. So you've got to wonder what the Biden administration thinks of this. We can't possibly continue to support Zelensky, that guy, after he said that, can we? Because in a clip less than 30 seconds long, he just blew up our entire rationale for supporting his side in the war. So we can't support him. Oh, of course we can. And we will. Here's Joe Biden from yesterday reaffirming America's unequivocal support for Ukraine.
No matter what happened in Russia, we, the United States, will continue to support Ukraine's defense and its sovereignty and its territorial integrity.
So to recap, we are currently fighting a war for democracy on behalf of a leader who just casually announced he's happy to end democracy, and our democracy-supporting leaders have no problem with that. In fact, they're strongly for it. Shocked? You shouldn't be. Of course they're for it. You should have seen this coming. Wars for democracy always cancel democracy in the process. That's why our leaders love them. And they all do it, even the virtuous leaders. Abraham Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. The British government under Winston Churchill threw an entire opposition party into prison and let them rot for the duration, in some cases with their families. So in a war for democracy, you can do anything. Imagine what a man might do who has fewer principles. If that man, say, ran Ukraine, he might seize churches, arrest priests, ban all criticism of himself, disappear his political opponents. And that's happening. Just last month, Zelensky threw a man called Gonzalo Lira into prison indefinitely for the crime of daring to write about the Ukrainian government in unflattering ways. Now, what's interesting, what separates this from other such cases, is that Lira is an American citizen. So Joe Biden, who is quite a bit of SWAT, as they say in Ukraine, could have freed Gonzalo Lira within hours. But he didn't. He didn't want to. He didn't say a word about it. He remains in prison tonight. So that makes you wonder, what's the real motive here? When normal people see war, they see death and destruction, sadness and suffering. But that's not what demagogues see. They understand it differently. They know that war means power, mostly for them. During wartime, everything they do can be justified. War is the gravest of all emergencies. Imagine the COVID lockdowns times 1,000 plus drones. Once war breaks out, politicians become gods with the power of life and death. So in a peaceful democracy, you have to debate your political opponents in public, and that's tiresome. But in a war for democracy, you can just throw them in jail or have them executed. You can see that many in Washington are looking forward to that moment. And that may be why they so fervently support Joe Biden, even many Republicans, against a potential opponent, the only opponent who opposes the war in Ukraine. If you were to end the war, their power would evaporate. Last week, a whistleblower produced WhatsApp messages from Hunter Biden, proving that, at the very least, his father knew about his influence peddling businesses abroad and probably participated in them. Quote, "I'm sitting here with my father," Hunter Biden wrote to his Chinese partners, demanding money. As much as anything reported about the Bidens over the last several years, this was the smoking gun. There it is, right there, in the message. That would have been enough to cripple a normal president. It would have been more than enough to keep a normal president from running for office again. But it had virtually no effect on Joe Biden. Most media outlets ignored it completely or tried to spin Biden's relationship with his son as some kind of moral victory. Quote, "The real meaning of the Hunter Biden saga, as I see it," wrote Nick Kristof of the New York Times, "isn't about presidential corruption, but is about how widespread addiction is and about how a determined parent with unconditional love can sometimes reel a child back." He actually wrote that. And if you doubt it, you should know that view was common. Here's the take from ABC.
The Hunter Biden story, the scandal, the this, the that, it's also the story of a father's love. And Joe Biden has never and will never give up on his son, Hunter, and will never treat him lesser than. And so he is a father first. Take it or leave it.
So a whistleblower produces a text message showing that Joe Biden was in the room with his son when his son was selling influence to an enemy power, the Chinese government. And ABC's take on it, Joe Biden is a father first. Take it or leave it. What accounts for a response like that? Well, that's the way you talk when you've got nothing to fear from an upcoming presidential election. You don't even bother to think of an excuse for your candidate because you don't need to. Your country has electronic voting machines. Joe Biden got 81,282,916 votes in 2020, and you're pretty sure he can do it again. In fact, you know he can. You're not worried. But actually, they should be a little worried. The people who control Joe Biden, Susan Rice, and the rest, know they can continue to run our government, writing the press releases, formulating the policies, and they can do it effectively forever, as long as Joe Biden gets dressed in the morning. And of course, that's their strong preference. These are fervent opponents of change. But the one thing these people cannot control is aging. Joe Biden is old. He's 80 now. He will be 85 at the end of the next term. People imagine that old age is a long, predictable progression from acuity to permanent unconsciousness. But often that's not at all how it actually works. When old people start to slide, they tend to slide fast. Joe Biden has begun that descent. Here he was yesterday.
And here's what she wrote to me, and I quote, "You can imagine my joy." She called them right away, and the next day they sent someone out to survey her yard. As Beth wrote, "This is the best thing that's happened to rural America since the Rural Electrification Act brought electricity to farms in the 30s and 40s. End of quote.
End of quote. You aren't supposed to hear that. Joe Biden read the stage directions out loud. That's like eating the garnish that comes with your entree. You're supposed to know not to do that. Joe Biden no longer does. In a year or two, he will be gone completely, and there will be no hiding it. At that point, the Democratic Party will face a secession problem. If Joe Biden is reelected next year and then forced to leave office during his term due to disability or death, that means Kamala Harris will become president of the United States. And nobody wants that, not even her husband. In real life, nobody likes Kamala Harris. That's not an attack on her. In fact, it's possible to feel pity for someone who's so universally reviled. It is instead an observation of unchanging physical reality like gravity or photosynthesis. Nobody wants Kamala Harris to be president. No one will benefit if she becomes president. So logic suggests there's going to be a change. It's going to have to be somebody else. And whoever that person is going to have to enter the race soon, before the election, after Biden drops out. Who could that person be? We don't know, obviously. This is all just guessing. But we do know whoever that is will have to have two essential criteria. He'll have to be as shallow, ruthless, and transactional as Joe Biden is, and he'll need to have flattery skills that are so polished and advanced they'd be considered superior even in the Saudi royal court. And there's only one man in modern America who fits that description. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and perhaps not coincidentally, Joe Biden's new closest friend. "I am here, Mr. President," Newsom told Biden at an event the two did together last week. "I am here as a proud American, as a proud Californian, mesmerized by not just your faith and your devotion to this country and the world we're trying to build, but by your results, by your action, by your passion, by your capacity to deliver. I am mesmerized by you, Joe Biden." Imagine saying that as a compliment. You couldn't do it. Few human beings could do it. But Gavin Newsom had no problem at all. Those words rolled right off his forked tongue. He never stopped smiling. So if you're looking for the leader of the coup, there he is right there.
So that was Tucker Carlson, as you probably recognize the voice. I sorely miss him at 7 o'clock Central.
We all do. We all do. Well, we are Bill and Allison, and you are listening to the Hill Country Patriot, your information station,
mm-hmm.
104.3 in Kerrville, 102.1 in Fredericksburg.
Mm-hmm.
And we're happy that you are with us. Are we?
We are.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. Yeah. And, you know, Target has been in the news this week.
The Target stores.
Target yeah. stores.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be really lament that we did not have a Target.
There
closer.
Is no Target store in the Hill Country, as far as I know,
mm-mm.
unless you define San Antonio or Austin as
San Antonio.
Hill Country.
Yeah. But and also Austin, because I live so far away from one, I've never spent a lot of time there. But it just seems like a really nice store until recently.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Levin has just come out with a new book, "The Democrat Party Hates America," and
is that the name of the book?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Target contacted his publisher, Simon & Schuster, and said, we will not carry the book.
Yeah, and their reasoning is?
Oh, because so many of their customers will be offended. However, they got such backlash from Mark Levin's supporters that they changed their stance, and they will sell it.
These companies are so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable that they're so stupid. You don't have to be a marketing expert to understand that.
Yeah, to offend your customer base.
Half the people are Democrats and half are Republicans. So you're going to, well, we're going to offend the Democrats with this book in our stores, so we're going to take it out. Well, then you offend the Republicans. You offend
exactly.
half your audience, half your customers. That's number one. I mean, that is just idiotic. And number two, hey, Target, you're the ones who push the gay pride crap down our throats.
Mm-hmm.
We won't worry about offending 90%+ of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Then you only wanted to plead for whatever perverse reasons. I mean, not only Target did that stuff.
They had their pride products and displays at the very front of the store.
Oh yeah, and not only that, they put out at the front of the stores swimsuits that allowed little boys to tuck their private parts to resemble looking like a girl. They sold that. They sold chest binders for girls, pride themed newborn size onesies.
Mm-hmm.
And the Target CEO stood by this crap, supported this crap despite the backlash.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you mean? Well, we're worried that Mark Levin's book is going to offend some of our customers. But you don't worry about offending the vast majority of Americans,
mm-hmm.
the normal Americans. I mean, this is just a bunch of crap. Well, Target's chief diversity and inclusion officer. By the way, let me go on a side note for a moment, and then I'll get back to this story since I might forget it. I was talking to a vice president at Guadalupe Bank, okay? And he told me that the regulators of banks come in, and, of course, they examine the books, and he says there's like a dozen things that have to be in order for you to get the highest rating. And he said the regulators, well, what's your... I think he said the diversity and inclusion, or what's the other one? ESG.
Yeah, right.
Whatever, one of those might have been ESG. You know, what's your program on that? And the president of the bank said, we don't have one. And the regulators said, well, you got to get one. And he said, no. No, we're not going to do that. Well, kudos to Guadalupe Bank. Exactly. That's terrific. Exactly. It's a locally owned bank in Kerrville. 64 families, I think, locally are involved in it. And
is it just in Kerrville?
You ask me questions I don't know the answers to, Allison. But anyway,
you're supposed to know everything.
You know, oh, thank you. But I think that's great. And he said because they're like this dozen criteria that they have to meet, they meet all the others, so they can skate on this one. And they knew the regulators couldn't downgrade them. So, but that was just terrific. Well, that's. Target's, now getting back to the story, Target's chief diversity and inclusion officer told employees that they should get on board with the company's woke agenda or leave. It's part of your job responsibilities. And guess what Allison and I dug up? We dug up an audio of the chief diversity and inclusion officer telling employees exactly that. Here it is.
It is important for us to also acknowledge that not everyone is going to believe or be bought into our strategies and our priorities on this topic. They just aren't. Then it becomes, okay, we may not be able to change your mind shift on appreciating why this is important, but you do understand you will be responsible for these behaviors, values, and expectations. And it also, quite frankly, puts a light on the folks that don't believe in this, but emphasizes that you still have to do it to do this job, to be a part of this company. And eventually, you'll see a change in their mindset, or they may leave. And, you know, that's a part of this process too. This isn't for everyone. But what has to be for everyone is accountability, and accountability comes with transparency. It's really important.
Okay, that was Target's chief diversity and inclusion officer excluding people who don't agree with her. Mm-hmm. They're so inclusive unless you disagree with them, and then you're a racist and you're a homophobe and a something else phobe and this kind of thing. You never hear of heterophobes, by the way. They are heterophobes. Target lost $9 billion in market value in a week after conservatives led a boycott against the company for all the crazy things that they were doing. Okay.
Sorry. You know, sorry.
Like a passing drummer.
Sorry.
All right. No, that emphasizes a point.
Right outside our door.
It emphasizes a point. Anyway, we found this cut, and I'm sorry. Alice and I looked for the name of the woman doing it and can't find it, but we thought we would do it anyway because she makes such good points about this subject.
So let me just get this straight. In the last few years, a biological male has been named Woman of the Year on several magazine covers. A biological male is referenced as a top-ranking female in our White House. A biological male was named the NCAA Women's Swimmer of the Year. A biological male is making tens of thousands of dollars being the face of womanhood for Nike, for Tampax, for Bud Light, for Kate Spade, and countless other companies. A biological male took home the award for Best Actress at the Golden Globes. Are we really still trying to make the case that feminism supports women when the feminists are completely silent and or cheering on biological men taking over the space of women? Somebody spell this out for me.
You know, it's a very strange thing. I mean, she nails it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the women? Exactly. Where are the feminists?
Exactly.
You know, crickets. Where are the feminists? Just crickets. You know, it's a very strange thing to take pride in your sexual interests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like taking pride in the fact that you know, like to ski or something. You know, it's even worse than that. Because here's a little essay. It comes from theburningplatform.com. I'm not real familiar with the website, but I happen to run across this. It's like taking pride in the fact you like mint chocolate chip ice cream, as this was some kind of achievement on your part. You know, I mean, it's a strange form of narcissism to tout what you like as some kind of achievement, something to be proud of. And it's most dangerous because sexual interest is a very different kind of interest than being interested in some kind of flavor of ice cream. You know, I mean, what if you went to the store and you found nothing but mint chocolate chip ice cream in the freezer case and then be lectured by mint chocolate chip activists and TV commercials and internet and social media about how fabulous mint chocolate chip ice cream is, and you have to affirm how fabulous it is. If not, you'll be called all sorts of names and maybe fired if you dare to say you're not particularly interested in mint chocolate chip ice cream, that you want, you know, strawberry. You know, what's wrong with the people who are doing this about the gay pride stuff and the trans stuff? Well, it's easy enough to answer. It's not that they're interested in people of the same sex. They are, but that's not the point. That's a superficiality. You know, we're all interested in various things. That's our own business. Most of us would never think of making it everyone else's business. So the real motive is these people are pathological narcissists. They want to force you to be interested in their interests. If you're not interested, then they say so you're a phobe. A phobe.
That's a good point.
Transphobe, homophobe, whatever.
Good point.
They characterize your disinterest and even dislike as fear. They imply your disinterest and dislike arises from a lack of understanding, and that's a moral defect, and you're afraid, when in effect, it's they who are the moral defects. It's pathological narcissism. It's a defect of the mind. It not only puts yourself first, it puts you above all others first and at everybody else's expense. So taking pride in your interests, that has nothing to do with some accomplishment of yours. You can be proud that you graduated from high school or college, or proud that you are an expert in some area. But no, none of this is your sexual preference. How do you be proud of that? So, and it also becomes something other people have to take pride in or be made to pretend they do. Surrendering their convictions to some public affirmation of this pridefulness that defines really pathological people. How else do you describe people who don't keep their pride to themselves, who demand that you acknowledge it, who scream and shout and march about it? And for, because what? They're interested sexually in someone of their same sex? I mean, what is that? So, I mean, for normal people, as I said, it's enough to take pride in what you've achieved. But you do it internally, knowing that you did an honest day's work and a good job, that you earned your daily bread, you put your family and kids first, you dealt fairly with people, you stood by your beliefs, you stood by your word. Now, that kind of pride is not the arrogant, entitled, boastful, insufferable pridefulness of the so-called pride movement. The one I'm talking about, putting your family and kids first, keeping your word, doing a good job, etc., that's what holds a society together. The other tears it apart. So we're at the end point of this pride movement where liking something sexually is a thing to be proud of. Well, it began a long time ago with the Black Pride movement. You know, that was supposed to be a response to racism toward people who happen to be black, if for no other reason than their being black. And that started this whole narcissistic prideful attitude of specialness in really nothing. Special, if it's not a special achievement to be born a certain color or to like something. Arrogant entitlement almost always means societal decay and destruction of society. The attitude is people who haven't achieved anything are owed something, which they today demand with militants. A good way to tell the one kind of pride from the other, as I talked about, is whether somebody demands you acknowledge their pride. And if you don't, characterizes you as a racist or homophobe or transphobe or whatever phobe. You know, there's an old saying that pride goes before the fall.
Isn't that in the Bible?
It's in the Bible. It's part of the Bible. But you don't have to be a Christian to understand that pride, which is arrogance, and this kind of pride, arrogance and entitlement, the narcissistic pride, goes before the fall. And we have fallen very far indeed. Well, we are Bill and Allison on the Hill Country Patriot, your information station for the entire Hill Country. And that's my little rant for the day.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
You're right. Before we get off the topic, though, here's another brand to boycott. Adidas. Are you aware of this, Allison?
Yes, I am.
You know what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're,
you might tell our listeners.
Well, that's what I plan to. They have a Pride swimsuit. A Pride swimsuit. Not only do they have a Pride swimsuit, it's modeled by men.
It's a woman's swimsuit.
Yes, thank you. A woman's Pride swimsuit, but the pictures in Adidas is pushing forward. It's modeled by men. You got to ask, who are they appealing to? Women? Men? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when women actually modeled women's bathing suits, not men.
Yeah, it makes me want to, me and other people like me, not want to buy their products.
Well, absolutely not. I say it's another brand to boycott. Mm-hmm. You know, we're running out of brands to boycott, but,
exactly.
You know, somebody posted a Twitter post, which I thought was good on this subject, about Adidas using a man to model a women's swimsuit. A pride swimsuit, by the way. Gay pride swimsuit. She said, Sophia Laurie tweeted, "We went from criticizing the use of only skinny female models due to body dysmorphia concerns in young girls to now using male models with completely different body structures than women to model women's clothing."
That's a very good point.
That's what I thought. So that's Adidas. No more buying Adidas. Don't go down, you know, don't go buy Adidas and wear it and drink your Bud Light. Don't be doing that. Saw a guy in the grocery store yesterday, and he was buying right next to Bud Light was a case of Modelo. And I said, "Good man, no more Bud Light." And he said, "Ew, no more Bud Light. No more Bud Light for him." Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Well, Biden's military can't tell the difference between sexes or between himself and Russia. And that's a little news story we got for you right now. Biden's military can't tell the difference between the sexes or between itself and Russia. Breaking news. This week, the U.S. Pacific Fleet showed it can't tell the difference between itself and Russia. Of course, they can't tell the difference between a man and a woman either. On Independence Day, this is unbelievable. This story is unbelievable. On Independence Day, the Pacific Fleet tweeted a photo of a serviceman saluting saluting a warship and an airplane in silhouettes, and it says Happy 4th of July, which we heard from Mike Rose, mm-hmm. but not a good thing to say. But it also said Happy Independence Day. Slight issue, okay? This serviceman, it was a man, so he's a serviceman, saluted a warship and an airplane in silhouette. Slight problem, they were not American planes and an American warship. They're all Russian.
Wow.
The ship in the U.S. Pacific Fleet tweet in the photo is a Kashin-class Russian destroyer. And the silhouetted planes are Russian Su-27 Flanker fighter jets.
Wow.
Our Navy is so stupid.
Yeah.
The Pacific Fleet is so stupid. That can't be an accident. That can't be an accident. How do you take a picture of a Russian fighter and a Russian destroyer and put it on a U.S. Navy tweet? You got to do that deliberately. It's not an accident. Not an accident. But again, you know, on July 4th, also the Pacific Fleet, they identified as Russian. That's basically it. But the Navy also has a drag ambassador, after all. His name is Joshua Kelly. He's assigned to the Rock Island Arsenal in Illinois. He identifies as a woman.
No kidding.
and the drag ambassador to get people to join the Navy. He's part of their ads. There's another one, Army Major Rachel Jones, Richard Jones, a male who claims to be a woman. And they tweeted, the Department of Defense tweeted over the Independence Day weekend. This is the actual tweet. I've got it in front of me. U.S. Army Major Rachel Jones found solace after coming out as a transgender female. Her journey from battling depression and suicidal thoughts to embracing authenticity inspires us all. I'm telling you.
She's the ugliest, quote-unquote, woman I've ever seen.
All right. But I'm telling you.
Who's it going to inspire?
I'm telling you. As you pointed out last week, Allison, what was that about Chinese third graders? Chinese third graders are studying calculus.
Mm-hmm.
Our third graders are being told that men can have babies.
Mm-hmm.
This military stuff, the Pacific Fleet stuff, the Department of Defense, DOD, coming out promoting transgender people. All of this is not going to end well.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to end well. I fear for the future of this country.
Exactly.
Do we have a military? We have a military more concerned with calling men women and women men and all this crap than defending our country?
Yeah.
You know, this is not going to end well.
So if a real war comes, we're in trouble.
Boy, ain't that the case. Well, coming up after our short break, we're going to have a story about Fox News promoting Bud Light. Can you believe that? And also, glue traps is a great way to catch scorpions and other bugs, but what do you do when a mouse or, God forbid, your cat gets stuck in one? Well, we'll have the answer when we come back from this break.
Bill and Allison, we're back from that short break. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. We're here every Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm. 8 to 10.
8 to 10, so be sure to join us. We've got so much to talk about. You can go to our website, hillcountrypatriot.com.
Well, did you know, Bill? You might not have known this. 97% of scientists agree with whoever is funding them.
That is so true. That's, you know, the founder of the Weather Channel, and we have had his interview on our program before, was interviewed by CNN, and we broadcast his audio. And the CNN interviewer said to him, let me back up. The founder of the Weather Channel thinks that the climate change stuff is a hoax, okay? He says it's just a scam to get money and for politicians to get more and more power and more control over our lives. He says it's a bunch of crap. The climate is not changing. He says it changes over eons, but it's not, you know, nothing, not man caused. And so the interviewer on CNN says, well, you're disagreeing with, you know, 98% of climate scientists. Are you saying they're wrong? And the founder of the Weather Channel says, yeah, I'm saying they're wrong. You know why they say that? Because they get government funding to say it. Any climate scientist who questions global warming, questions so-called climate change, doesn't get funded. That's why they all
that's right.
tout it.
That's right.
So as you said, what did you just say, Allison? What did you just quote?
Oh, 97% of scientists agree with whoever is funding them.
Agree with whoever's funding them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right.
Well, okay, while you're talking about the environment and climate change, let me get this straight. I go to the grocery store, And I buy a pound of sliced ham in a plastic bag, a loaf of bread in a plastic bag, a gallon of milk in a plastic jug, a pack of napkins in plastic wrap, a store-made salad in a plastic tub, a plastic bottle of mustard, and a plastic bottle of ketchup. But they won't give me a plastic bag to carry it home, because the plastic bag is bad for the environment.
Yeah, if you live in Austin, that's true.
Oh, no. What happened to us in Austin, we were actually, I think it was at a Lowe's, and we were buying a bunch of little tiny things.
Oh, yeah.
I forget
what. Little parts for something, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But we had a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of them. They wouldn't give us a bag of any kind.
No.
Not even a paper bag.
Oh, no, that's bad for trees.
So yeah. But fortunately, we happened to have something in the car that we could.
Yeah, I mean, we bought like 40 little things, and we had to carry them out in our hands.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, this is Austin for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we were also in Austin, and you asked for a straw.
Oh, that's right. We were out to lunch, and I asked for a straw, and the waitress...
Oh, it was like you
turned up her nose and walked away.
Oh, it was about like you pulled a gun on her or something.
She didn't even say, I'm sorry, we don't have any.
No.
But no, it was just...
It was like she was horrified that you would ask for a straw.
Yeah.
This in a town where they give away needles to drug addicts, but they won't give you a straw.
Yeah.
In a restaurant. Yeah. Really? Oh,
well, I guess next time we go to Austin, we'll have to take our own
straws. Take our own straws and bags. Golly. Yeah, well, that's Austin for you. Okay, what did you have on glue traps, Allison?
Oh, yeah, we put out glue traps to catch scorpions. And unfortunately, we have good news, bad news. We have caught several.
Yeah.
But what do you do if something other than a scorpion... like a mouse or your cat or dog gets stuck on it. So number one point is make sure you check those traps often.
Good point.
Yeah. And if an animal does get stuck, you can use oil to free them from the glue trap, like cooking oil.
Yeah, any kind of oil.
That baby oil.
Motor oil. Anything that's viscous.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've got, cooking oil or... Like I said, baby oil.
All you do is just pour it on the glue trap. Make sure it hits the feet of the animal and work it in, and the animal. I did that with a mouse not too long ago. There was a glue trap caught a mouse, and poor little thing was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took I grabbed some canola oil we had in the. We shouldn't even have canola oil, but we did.
We were told it's better than.
We were told that, but it's terrible. Anyway, poured it on the glue trap. Well, I took the mouse with the glue trap outside and poured it, and he got away very easily. And I hate to catch a mouse because if you don't release them, there's you can't just pull it off their feet because that would wound them.
Yeah. We're gonna take a quick little break, and what's Bill gonna talk about when we get back?
Is that my tease? What am I going to talk about next? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to talk about next. Fox News is promoting Bud Light. Wow. Guess we shouldn't be surprised, but Alice and I are going to give you the details when we come back from this real quick break. Here are the Jive Aces.
We are going to be seeing live in person in England.
Soon.
Make me happy.
Well, we're Bill and Allison. Thanks for joining us.
On the Hill Country Patriot, your information station. We're on 8 to 10 on Saturdays.
Plus, you can catch us
where else, Allison?
HillCountryPatriot.com from 8 to 10 on Saturdays. Or anytime, FirstCoupleOfTexasRadio.com.
We're on 24/7 there.
Mm-hmm. And you were going to tell us something about Fox News?
That's why I'm so tired. We're on 24/7. Yeah, I was going to talk about Fox News. Again, you wonder what is wrong with these people. I mean, they don't have a marketing brain in their head. Not only them, Adidas, Target, Bud Light. The list goes on, unfortunately. These people are complete idiots. This past Monday, Fox News aired a segment about a good organization, a good charity, that was an ad for Bud Light and other Anheuser-Busch products. it's hard to know which is worse now, Fox News or Bud Light. Steve Ducey was talking to a guest, and he was the founder of Folds of Honor, which is a charity that provides support for the families of fallen and disabled service members and first responders, a fine group. So Steve Ducey said on Fox and Friends, So, Dan, this is the guy, as people look in on this 4th of July weekend, how can they help you help other families? And the guest said, well, 13 years ago, I reached out to this company, and this is his answer. I mean, this is set up by Fox News. They knew what he was going to say. Well, 13 years ago, I reached out to this company, Anheuser-Busch, and they said, hey, we believe in you. Anheuser-Busch is a great company. They did us for us. We've been in partnership for 13 years. We've got people literally can crack a cold Budweiser, a Bud Light, and celebrate their freedoms. And it's a great, easy way to say I love my... That's a great, easy way to say I love my country. Crack a cold Bud. I mean, why in the world would Fox walk into the, just walk into this controversy of Bud Light? It just reinforced people's perceptions about Fox News' lack of conservative principles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically, they allowed an ad for Bud Light to be pushed on Fox News. Yeah. I mean, are they complete idiots, or they're just in your face and they don't give a, you know what? Blah, 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 blah.
So what I say is, cheers to everyone who does their own research. In the age of information, ignorance is a choice.
That's a good point. Ignorance is a choice because there's so much available, so much information. This is really the information age, and you know you're on your information station, the Hill Country Patriot. But talking in, Bud Light appears to be going all in with the LGBT audience. They made a guest appearance at the Toronto Pride Parade just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, maybe they're trying to set a record for the quickest destruction of a company in history. I mean, Bud Light was a sponsor of the event where adults were naked in front of children. Some booths at the event were pushing for sex ed to begin in kindergarten. Bud Light is just pushing more people away. As I said, I saw a guy in the grocery store yesterday. He's buying Modelo. And I said, no more Bud Light, man. He said, that's right. That's right. So, I mean, it's Levi's also. Well, we'll get into that next week. But Levi's is following in Bud Light's footsteps. So what has happened to these people? You have a good theory about that. What's happened to all these company executives who should know better?
Money?
It is money. Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. It is absolutely the money. Follow the money. But more than that, Allison, you had a great comment. Because I had said, maybe COVID affected their brains. And you said, no, it's the vaccine.
The COVID vax.
They're all these company executives are vaxxed. And the vax has made them crazy. That's what I think. I think that's right. That's right. Well, boy, 2 hours goes fast, I'll tell you. Time flies like an arrow, and fruit flies like a banana. You can chew on that one for a while. We're Bill and Allison. Thanks for joining us. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all your ways, and He will direct your paths.